Our next case today is number 4, United States against Wright. Mr. Geyer.
Please, Court. My name is Dave Geyer. I represent Clifton Wright in this matter, and I believe there are three principal issues before the Court today. First, as to the waiver of the objection to the report and recommendation, I have provided, pursuant to the government's jurisdictional motion, an affidavit on my behalf indicating some of the reasons as to why I believe this case steps outside of the Hernandez-Rivas and Brown decision in the sense that it does create a situation where the ends of justice would be defeated if, in fact, the court were not to permit this appeal to go forward. Particularly, Mr. Wright, as I indicated, was indigent as well as illiterate. In my representation of him, I had to read to him every document that was provided by the government, and it was a substantial discovery. He had made a decision early on not to go to trial based on various conferences I had with him. When the report and recommendation came out, he continued to say he did not want to go ahead with the trial. He then changed his mind.
See, that's the biggest problem. This doesn't sound like a forfeiture. This sounds like a waiver. In the old language of Fay against Noya, it sounds like a deliberate bypass.
Well, again,
Bennett made a decision not to do something, and now he rues it.
Well, again, Your Honor, first of all, I would take all responsibility for any decision that's made not to make objections or to waive issues. I mean, that's my problem, and I guess I would stand by that. Although, Mr. Wright was illiterate in the sense that in my conversations with him, we had several conversations. Again, I don't want to go too much into attorney-client privilege, but when I explained the things to him again, after this had occurred, he indicated that then he would like to press forward with the trial. I did not raise it again at the trial level, and again, for the reasons I set forth in the affidavit.
Our problem here is truly that if we were to make an exception in this case, what would there be to stop every attorney from, making the same argument? And it just, it's just not enough to invoke this exception.
Well, I understand, Your Honor, and I guess the reason I would posit this is that I'll say it's a CJA appointment, and I say that with affection. I've taken several CJA appointments from the district court and have argued before this court on several occasions on CJA appointments. Again, I believe attorneys should give something back, and I do those, I said, with great affection. The issue with those, of course, is that I have to run another practice to be able to do the almost pro bono of a CJA appointment. Not that I think CJA appointments should be the reason that lawyers miss doing certain things, but in the rush of continuing a regular practice plus trying to do CJA appointments, things tend to fall through the cracks. And again, the responsibility is mine, not Mr. Wright. I believe if given that type of concern. That may be one reason if the court would so determine to alter it, that would be one of the reasons to do that. Again, I'm not here to, say anything other than the responsibility rests with me.
Let's go on to the next problem.
Sure.
Because what really would have been your basis for objection to the fact findings of the magistrate? I mean, and what objections would there have been to the legal conclusion?
Certainly, Your Honor.
And I'm assuming you would have made the same arguments that you make here.
That's correct, Your Honor. Again, I made those at the time of the initial evidentiary hearing, and I set it out that way. The problem we have here is whether or not this is really a Terry stop, whether the officer had reasonable belief or reasonable suspicion. Set out a number of the facts. Again, my time's going to be limited arguing here today, so I'm not going to restate everything there. But you have a police...
Look, we've got an officer with a valid safety concern. We have an officer who knows he's had drug arrests. He knew he had a recent arrest for an incident involving a gun. He refuses to keep his hands in plain view. He kind of, it would seem, taunts the officer by saying, "Do you want to know what's in my pocket?" I mean, at that point, the officer reasonably seizes his hand to remove it from his pocket for his own safety concern.
Well, again, Your Honor, if this had all been occurring in an instantaneous action, I would probably agree. We've got an officer who observed this Mr. Wright for a substantial period of time. He stands by the door of the car. Mr. Wright is not told he's free to go. When he gets out, he's instructed to go back to the back of the car. The officer, during this approximately 10 to 15 minutes, does not observe Mr. Wright do anything that would give him suspicion that something, in fact, is going wrong on that issue. As it relates to...
Those hands in the pocket are pretty scary.
Again, Your Honor, those by themselves I would agree, but given the fact that he had observed no bulges in Mr. Wright's pants, he's basically wearing pajamas, had an opportunity to observe him for a substantial period of time.
Well, that's the problem. How do you see a bulge in those pants that the that people wear today?
Well, again, Your Honor,
harem pants or something.
I will not, I guess dress code is in my realm. With respect then to the, again, just finishing that off, Your Honor, I do believe that if there had been a reasonable suspicion, it would have occurred prior to that time. Again, he is standing by the door of a car. Mr. Wright's not told he's free to leave. I believe this is more than a mere Terry stop. This is a custodial interrogation that takes it to the next level. I also believe that, again, taking him to the back of the car, having him stand in the back of the car for a substantial period of time brings that into the play, too. With respect to the key issue then to the motel room, we do have it's obviously coming down to Rodriguez. It's a issue as to whether or not there's authority. As I set forth in the brief, I believe that there is no actual authority based on what the police officer has talked about with Ms. Harden. She indicates that it's not her motel room. She had no interest in the motel room. She had not paid for the motel room. The apparent authority issue is a different one than when Rodriguez, where the wife goes downstairs and opens up a room that her husband had the key for. In this case, from all the information provided to the officers, it was Mr. Wright's room that Mr. Wright had the ability to go in the room. He'd given her very limited access to the room, and that the police officers, not Ms. Harden, is the one who then opened up the door. I'll reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Certainly, Mr. Geyer. Mr. Reinhart.
Good morning, Your Honors. David Reinhart from the Western District of Wisconsin. The case presents three issues: whether Wright waived appellate review of his motion to suppress, whether Wright was unreasonably seized during the traffic stop, and whether Arkea Harden had authority to consent to the defendant's hotel room. In addressing that first issue, Wright did waive his right to appellate review of the motion to suppress evidence by failing to file an objection with the district court after receiving the report and recommendation. And these facts are identical to the Hernandez-Rivas case. In that case, the defendant failed to file an objection with the district court after the report and recommendation by the magistrate. The facts, which are pretty much identical to the facts here, they indicated in that case that would did not fall under the exception to waiver, that did not defeat the ends of justice. And as this court pointed out today, if we were to adopt the factual situation, the defendant argues that we should adopt as a portion of this exception, the exception would in fact swallow the rule. So based on that, we feel that the defendant has waived his right to appellate review. In addressing the next issue regarding the seizure at the traffic stop, Wright was not seized for purposes of the Fourth Amendment initially at the traffic stop. He wasn't handcuffed, was never asked to leave, was never told he couldn't leave, never attempted to leave. There wasn't a seizure in this case until Officer Nail grabbed the defendant's hand, and that was justified. That was justified for Officer
Nail. I'm puzzled by this. How could he not have been seized at the traffic stop? I think you mean there wasn't a follow-up search until something occurred.
Well, initially at the traffic stop, there wasn't a seizure because under
traffic stop is an arrest on probable cause. See, Wren against the United States.
Correct. In this particular
that's a form of seizure.
In this particular case, the driver
seizure.
In this particular case, it was the driver, Arkea Harden, who had committed the traffic violation, and she had consented to a search of her car, and that's where the defendant was, in fact, the passenger. Your Honor, so based on those considerations, there also was not a, Arkea Hardin didn't have, or did have authority to consent to a search of the defendant's hotel room.
And if I give my neighbor a key to my house, which I'll never do again, can my can my neighbor consent to a search of my house?
Well, I think this case is different from the hypothetical that the court points out.
How?
Well, in this particular case, you also had the officer with knowledge that she, in fact, had unlimited access to that room. She had been in Wright's room several days prior, and Wright told her that she could use the room whenever she wanted to get away.
So if I say to my neighbor, you can watch TV in my den anytime you want, can my neighbor consent to a search of my house?
I think that in that particular situation, if in fact that neighbor also produces a key to that house, I think that yes, that they're she could consent.
Where do you live?
Madison, Wisconsin. Mm.
Where, of course, everybody leaves his door unlocked all the time, right?
Don't you think that's an awfully thin argument for consent to search? I mean, all she has is a key and a vague invitation. Come and watch my TV when you want.
Well, I think
so
it's a key
then
and...
She can let anyone search my house?
Well, I think it's the key and the unlimited access, which is the critical factor.
You don't... You know, under the Rodriguez case, do you really need or want to rely on a claim of actual authority?
I think the Rodriguez case, they held on that case that it was apparent.
No, actually, the Supreme Court said that neither the common law doctrine of actual nor the doctrine of apparent authority is conclusive. The question is whether the search is reasonable under the circumstances known to the officer. So the question is, if we were to reach the merits, was it reasonable for the officer to believe that she had authority?
And I think in this case it was, in fact, reasonable based on all the things that she had told the officer and producing the key, and then the key actually working in the door at that hotel.
I want you to go home, and I want you to think about all the people that have keys to their neighbor's homes. And think about whether or not that should allow neighbors to permit the police to enter those homes.
Well, and I think that would be, usually neighbors who have keys to homes, you know, go in there to get mail or whatever when the person is on vacation, or they're usually limited of their use of the key. And I think that's what's different about this case as opposed to the hypothetical.
No, your problem is that you've now sunk back to the actual authority question, whereas your answer on either the apparent authority branch or the Rodriguez question said, well, you know, what the police knew was that she had a key and it fit the door. That would be true of Judge Rovner's neighbor or housekeeper. You've probably induced my colleague to go out and change the locks on
right.
the door overnight. Tell all her friends that they're no longer welcome to visit her house.
I may not sit for the next case. I've got a neighbor with a key.
I can see the court's distinction when talking about a neighbor, and I think that is distinct, though, from the situation which is before the court. I think the access given to the guest of the hotel room really differentiates this case from the hypothetical that is given. I have no further argument. We ask that the government ask the judgment be affirmed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. Mr. Geyer, anything further?
As the court indicated, the issue with respect to access to the motel room is reasonable. Again, Mr. Wright had been taken into custody. Mr. Wright had not been apparently questioned because they got the information from Ms. Hardin to have access to this motel room. I think under all those circumstances, again, under the factual distinction between this case and Rodriguez and whether or not this was reasonable under the circumstances, I believe there's enough difference to indicate that this is a fall outside of that particular preview or purview. And again, with respect to the waiver issue, just one last kick at the cat at that. Whatever failures are, it rests with me. Mr. Wright is now serving a substantial sentence. I believe that the ends of justice would be defeated if this court did not take this under all the circumstances I've tried to lay out for this court and the factual portion of the affidavit as well as the brief. And with that, I have nothing more. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. Geyer. And Mr. Geyer, we thank you for taking the case and the assistance you've been both to your client and to us. The case is taken under advisement.